Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's a podcast about antiques.
What antiques is it about today?
It's going to be talking about rare books and first editions. Because if this podcast has taught you anything, it should be that I tend to make episodes about things that I'm dealing with.
Have you been dealing with first editions lately?
I have, actually.
Do tell.
I've just been nabbing them.
Just snapping them up?
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to start this out by saying that books are oftentimes the most overlooked thing. Because they tend to, when you have them, they tend to appear in bulk. Like, if you've ever been at a yard sale and seen a box full of books and been like, I don't have time for that right now.
I never have been like that, but I'm sure many of our listeners have.
Even I have, and I love books too. basically, I stopped doing that and started looking at the books and then realized that nobody looks for first edition except for people who collect first editions. And so I was like, I bet more people would like to know how, because that's probably what's stopping you. So this is that. This is that episode.
All right.
So, let's start with the obvious, the big first one. What's a first edition? This is not as clear-cut as your face suggests it should be. What do you know a first edition as?
It is the initial printing of a book.
Mostly, right? Problem is, real first edition depends on who you fucking ask. And a variety of other problems.
Oh god.
So the problem with first editions and them being marked and discoverable is that the printer has no benefit from identifying a first edition. The first edition is not, it's not something that they plan on collecting. So literally it's the first printing run of a book, like Ken said. Usually a first edition printing is a few thousand of the book that you use to figure out if it's going to be worth your time to print more books. So it's a pretty limited run. If you notice that I use the word limited there, you suddenly understand why they're rare. That's why that's the one collectors are obsessed with getting their little goblin hands on. Emotionally, a first edition is as close as you can get to the original work, short of pulling a Misery and taking captive the author. True first editions, the way collectors define them, are the OG, original cover, original text, typo, blemish, everything. The first time a publisher releases a new book, all copies of that book that are printed without major changes can be considered a first edition.
But
if the initial print of the first edition sells out and the publisher produces a subsequent printing with the same typeset, the book is described as a first edition second printing. As far as a collector is concerned, this is not a first edition.
Oh, I just realized the, like, etymological difference between edition and printing.
Yeah.
Because the first edition refers to the editing, and if it has not been edited further, it is still the first edition, but a different printing.
Exactly.
Got it.
So the key for publishers is the word typeset. This goes back to when printing a book was a huge physical undertaking, and it was literally referred to the first edition being the way they laid out the plates to print the book the first time. When it changed, they had to be different. It's a different typeset. That's a handy understanding on why it feels like the publishers are trying to fuck you.
Would it also be good to go into how books used to be printed? I don't know a lot, but I know a little.
Yeah, I mean, I know about as much as anyone might need to know.
Because basically, before computer printing, you had each individual letter on, like, a thing. That's how newspapers got made, was, like, each letter was its own little type thing. And then you arrange all those into the words, into the article, and then it prints a newspaper. And that's mostly because, like, newspapers are a daily thing. They change on the daily, so you need lots of tiny movable pieces that you can reuse day in, day out for all the different stories. But books are a forever.
Well,
books you sell day after day after day. So for them, and because they're so long, it is less costly to make just a whole block for each page and have that print.
And those blocks are called the typeset.
I was afeard that was unclear.
Yeah, no, that might have been, so thank you for clarifying. I appreciate that. The history does become informative at this point.
It's also why you get fewer editions of older books, because when the entire page is one solid metal piece, it becomes a bitch and a half to change individual letters or words.
Yeah, so you had to rack up a lot of edits before they would think about making a second edition. You know, I'm always, like, forgetting these, like, basic things like the history of printing as it relates to the subject at hand. Any substantial changes made to the book after the first printing, the addition of a chapter, a foreword, major edits, the retraction of a chapter,
the reinsertion of the missing epilogue that explains how the entire book was possible. Yes, I am looking at the London publishers of the first edition of Moby Dick, you fucks!
Actually, Moby Dick will play into this a lot of different ways, huh?
Oh, man.
Because, like, chapter 11?
Oh, man.
Well,
They tanked the book sales in England and America. It would have been a runaway bestseller at the time of its writing had they not fucked it up.
So you're saying the first edition lacked the epilogue?
Yes.
Okay. That sucks.
No. Like, you don't understand. Moby Dick, without the epilogue, ends with the narrator dying.
I can see why that would make people not want to read it.
Right. So, because of that, in London, it got very bad reviews. And the London edition was released before the American edition, so even after the American correct edition was released, no one bothered reading it because everyone in England had already read it and said it was garbage. And so Melville's great work that he wrote to impress Nathaniel Hawthorne went completely unappreciated until the 1920s, well after his Bartleby the Scrivener-esque death.
God, that's so sad.
Yes. I'll never forgive anyone in England for this.
So, quick question. If you were to collect Moby Dick, what would be your true first edition? Would it be the first printing, or would it be the first correct printing?
Gotta catch them all.
Oh, you just want them all?
Yeah.
So you don't have, like, a hierarchy here?
I mean, ideally, I would have Melville's original handwritten manuscript.
Yeah.
But I can't have that. So I will settle for everything else.
Okay, but if you... Okay, you put the British edition and the American edition in a fight to the death. Who do you want to win?
The American edition.
Okay.
It is correct.
That does answer my question.
And not missing substantial chunks of the text for no good goddamn reason.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just... I have a lot of feelings.
I respect that.
About the whale.
And it's a good story, if not a happy one.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of facts that I, like, kind of repeat here pretty often, because this is a really convoluted subject.
That's fair. That's how you learn.
Yeah. First edition is the first edition printing of the... Okay, that's... I wrote this one down because this is very... It's a good sentence. The first edition is the first edition printing of the first edition. And I literally copied that so that you would know how convoluted this can get. An edition is a completely different presentation of the same work. Second, third, and so on. That could be a paperback, a hardcover when the original was paperback. Different covers, special releases of illustrations. Again, the inclusion of an author foreword, I guess sometimes when you forgot to put in the fucking end of the book. Since the first edition really means the first printing of the first edition, because this is a trip of a subject. The first printing of subsequent releases are referred to as first thus. That was what you were talking about when you say different publishing houses that get a hold of the same manuscript. When they're reprinting a first edition of, say, just the one with the exciting cover, that's a first thus.
So the American edition of Moby Dick and the England edition of Moby Dick are both first thus?
No. One is the true first edition. I imagine the England one chronologically. It gets a little more complicated when you're talking about international stuff. It's more like...
Before copyright law was invented.
Yeah. the first edition of the Rockwell Kent illustrated one would be a first thus.
Ooh. That's a good one.
It is a really good one. The first edition of Steinbeck's The Red Pony might sell for thousands of dollars, but the first illustrated edition of the work, while still collectible, would probably sell for something like a couple hundred, because the first illustrated edition is a first thus.
That's bogus, because the second one has pictures and it should be worth more.
That's always been my opinion, but I collect books based on how cool they look, so...
I guess being illustrators were probably biased.
Yeah, that's true. My next note just says, what the fuck, Doc If? Because I'm going to say the sentence again because it makes me very happy. The first edition is the first edition printing of the first edition. So to clarify, publisher's first edition, the first printed version of a book before edits or changes are made. This includes cover, format, etc. If a first run sells out and they print it again, but unchanged from the first run, it is considered first edition, second printing. A collector's first edition. Regardless of what the publishers did, this is the edition of the book that supersedes all other editions chronologically, barring a specialty collection like Ken wants, such as an advanced copy, an editing manuscript, or the manuscript itself.
Or the ghost of Herman Melville.
Or Herman Melville's ghost in a little jar on his desk.
God, if only.
Like a little, like, snow globe, I'm picturing. But all the snow is his tears. Because Nathaniel Hawthorne never loved him back.
Aww.
God, I love Melville. So, since the collector's first edition is the chronological first printing, this can cause some problems. Because sometimes that wasn't really well recorded. A good example is 1984 by George Orwell. The UK hardcover edition, published by Secker and Warburg in 1949, is considered the true first edition over the US edition printed by Harcourt the same year. I'll get into that a little bit later about why we say that. However, UK first edition comes in both a red and green dust jacket, and there is no documentation to figure out which was the first one.
Oops.
So there's kind of like a civil war of first editions of 1984. Because, like, everyone, it's a little bit like the Starred Belly Sneetches, where it's just like, no, green copy is good, no, red copy. I think people just kind of agreed it was the red first, but there's no proof, there's no way to prove it. So why I said that earlier about why the UK edition is considered over the Harcourt Brace in the US, despite the fact they were all being published basically concurrently. In that situation, where there is simultaneous international printing, the edition printed in the author's home country is considered the true first.
So it is the American.
So it would be the US edition. You
are
correct.
The correct edition.
So yeah,
the
vindication.
The edition actually includes the whole goddamn book.
Vindication, the true first edition would be the US.
All right, got this.
Although I'm not sure if that would count, like, since it was later chronologically. To a certain extent, it comes down into what's important to the collector.
Having the entire book, you English fox.
God. Okay, so... Do you want to know how to identify first editions?
Sure do.
Sometimes they just say it.
Oh, that's helpful.
That's how I find... I'm not going to lie to anybody. That's how I get most of mine.
Like the Iliad?
The Iliad? What?
Do you not remember? Okay, sorry.
Clearly
don't. Probably no one else listening remembers this either, but there was a terrible rom-com a while back where, like, a female professor gives her male student a first edition copy of the Iliad.
What?
And that's supposed to demonstrate, like, how into the classics they both are.
What?
You can't have, like, a first printing of the Iliad, I guess, by, like, a certain publishing house or, like, a certain translation. But it did very much start off as not a thing on paper.
As a first edition of the oral tradition, everybody.
Yeah, that's a first edition of my spoken word.
Hoof. Hoof.
But yeah, everyone very much made fun of this film. If you remember which film this is, email us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
Do you know the title?
I think Sandra Bullock was in it. I'm not sure.
My brain immediately parsed that as the film was called I Think Sandra Bullock.
I feel like that would be a better film than whatever the fuck this was.
Also, wouldn't the first printing of the Iliad be like...
In Greek?
Yeah, in Greek, like ancient Greek. And also about as old and probably not readable.
Yeah.
Hoof.
Like, maybe, if this were an intelligent film, maybe, like, the first edition of a particular English translation, which
yeah.
would probably be dating back to, like, the 1800s, or maybe the late 1700s, maybe.
That's even a stretch.
Yeah.
That's goofy. So, if you want to find your first edition copy of the Iliad to give to your student as a token of love, which is also bad, don't do that. In addition to the fact that sometimes they just say first edition on them, there are numbers that are usually on, I'll say, the second page with alongside copyright information. Copyright can also be helpful. I'll get into that in a minute, though. Let's stick with the numbers. So on the inside of a book, within the first two pages, are a string of seemingly random numbers. They can be descending, ascending, or completely random. All you have to do to identify what printing you have is to look for the lowest number in the string. In this example, the lowest number is 1. Cut that. There's an image that I cannot share with people.
The lowest number being 1 is too much knowledge for the internet to have.
You can't have... Well, so in an example where 1 is present, the lowest number would be 1, indicating a first edition, first printing.
Is it these numbers?
No, not those numbers. We're looking at it.
Oh, wait, fuck.
Hey, congrats, you have a first edition.
Oh, shit!
In which, well, actually, I believe it's a first of those, so that book was printed in the UK.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. For all of you not watching my apartment right now, I pulled a book off the shelf at random to test this tutorial, and it turns out I have a first edition of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell that I've just been, like,
holy shit,
throwing into backpacks in the backseats of cars.
You can't plan this kind
and,
of
like,
comedy,
as
folks.
You can see, I've, like, post-it noted every other fucking page.
You know, first U.S. edition is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and, like, I do still thankfully have the book jacket, but it's not in great shape.
Oh, my God.
So I'm just going to...
Put that back!
I'm just going to put this back on the shelf before I can do any more fucking damage to it.
Okay, do you have an older book, like a little bit more vintagey, that we can use? I can show you the number sequence. You remember how I did say that sometimes it just says first edition?
Yeah, no, it fucking does.
Discoveries live.
Oops.
Congratulations, I guess.
I did fucking buy that 14 years ago at a Barnes & Noble.
God, there we go.
My big new shit stand right in the front of the shop.
Yeah. Like it's so good. I'm so glad that happened while we were recording.
Fuck, okay.
So sometimes identifying a first edition is as easy as grabbing a book off your shelf.
Oops.
I want this to be like a Laurel and Hardy thing where you just keep pulling first editions.
I think it might be. Check that. I think this might be one of those.
No, this is a third edition.
Okay, thank fuck. Alright.
Okay, this one also doesn't have the numbers, so fuck you, why don't you have this? Okay. This one just says which edition it is.
Okay, let me just find books.
Yeah, this one explains that it's a republication, which is different.
Let's try this one.
Okay, inside the Victorian home. Big surprise he has this one.
Fuck off. You want books, I give you books. The more you ask.
What the fuck? Do they not do this anymore? Did I go too old? This is a first edition too, Ken.
What?
I'm gonna fucking beat you to death with all these first editions of the first American edition! I hate this!
If that doesn't work out, try this!
Okay, this might not because this is a different publishing.
Fuck!
Yeah, this only has the ISBN.
Okay.
It's because it's an unusual publishing. Like, I don't know how to...
I like her using unusual publishing as a euphemism for self-published.
Well, you know, I'm not gonna be fucking... Self-publishing is I mean, I can guarantee that is the first edition, like... For several reasons.
It's print on demand, aren't they all?
Okay, this is a second edition. I think this might be an older book thing.
Okay, I do own older books.
I think I specialized so hard that I forgot that books were printed past the 1930s.
Give me a minute, I will get you some older books.
On the book hunt.
Great.
Okay, these might...
Try these.
These might do the trick. Hey, Ken? This copy of The Cleveland Street Affair is also a first edition.
This copy of what?
The Cleveland Street Affair is a first edition.
Oh my god. Hey, guess what else I've just been tossing into backpacks and scribbling notes in?
It's so so pregnant with notes.
Oh god.
Well, they're on... Well...
Okay, someone else drew that.
Yeah.
Because I don't make brackets that way, but,
Have you been writing in this?
I have not been writing
in
that.
Okay, then
you're
fine.
Someone has.
Well, that's regrettable, but...
So I have a first edition copy of The Cleveland Street Affair. That's cool. Do I own anything?
Isn't this a fairly scarce book?
Yeah.
Do you own anything that isn't clearly marked first edition? I should have brought... I have one, and I didn't even think to bring it. Okay, let's try these.
Try these!
Do we have a secret cachet of first editions?
I guess every book in my fucking house is a first edition.
I was joking when I said it was gonna be like a fucking goof. Here we are! I found them! Oh my god, here it is.
Thank fuck!
This is the sequence of numbers I'm referring to. It is not the ISBN.
Okay.
So the smallest number here is 6. So this is the 6th edition.
All right. We finally found that in the 10th book we looked in, which was a Signet Classic edition of Henry IV Part 2 by Shakespeare.
There we go. So now Thanks. That Ken is just drowning in first editions.
Also, someone else has circled the copyright dates in this used paperback.
I think trying to copyright Shakespeare is going to be kind of a legally gray affair.
I think you can copyright it once you add footnotes.
Oh, that's true. And I will definitely have to remember to post up some examples.
Yeah, maybe just take a picture of this.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So that I definitely have an example handy.
Live on podcast.
Live. Live. Ken discovers that he is just covered in first editions.
Hey, everyone listening, check your bookshelves right the fuck now, because you don't know what the fuck you have.
Yeah. That's actually, it's good advice because there are a lot of books, and a lot of people have first editions of newer books because you just go out and buy them the first time they're available to print. Like, there are probably a lot of people who have the first edition of whatever J.K. Rowling's detective novel name is, I forgot.
Steve the Not Magic Detective Does a Crime.
So, yeah, so there are a lot of people who are excited to go get Steve the Not Magic Detective Does a Crime, so they ran out and got basically what is the first edition. Although the first edition, as it was probably simultaneously printed, will be the one from the UK. So the string of numbers are descending, ascending, or in totally random order, as the example we had. To identify what printing you have, like I said, look for the lowest number in the string. In the example we found, the lowest number was 6, so it's a 6th edition, but I believe it was the first printing of that specific signet edition, and it was explicit about that.
Too bad I already drew all over it.
That's all right. I don't think it's valuable. No offense. You got plenty of other ones to make up for. even if the lowest number is 2, 3, 6, if the publisher is still using the original typeset, copyright page might still say first edition. In the case of the Henry the IV,
yep.
It did not say that because it was most assuredly not the original typeset, because it had footnotes.
And also wasn't in Shakespeare's handwriting.
Yeah. Also that. Also heavily translated. So if the copyright page does not say what edition you have, still has the string of numbers, check the date on the page. Look up the original publication date of the book, see if it matches. If the string of numbers has a 1 in it and the copyright page date matches the publication date, it's probably a first printing of the first edition.
So I'm looking at book, it says copyright 1960, and I then go on the trusty Googles and ask when was book first published, and Googles tells me 1960. I probably have an unlabeled first edition?
Yes, but the number, if the numbers are present, will also have the 1 present in the string.
Right. I'm talking about the string of numbers isn't there, but the copyright is.
If the copyright and the first date of printing matches up, there is a healthy chance of not a guarantee.
Okay.
You would definitely have to go dig into what publisher was the first, and you can start matching up from there. It's a very good place to start looking, because thankfully we have the internet and you can find out a lot about what was the first publishing house and compare it to publishing houses almost always tell you which one it is in the book. So there you go. You should always check to see what the specific publisher usually does. There are actually a lot of resources for that, I will tell you at the end of the episode. There are a lot of people who have compiled how different publishing houses over the years have presented their editions. So that could be really helpful.
Nice.
To reiterate to the point about true firsts, country of origin, and simultaneous publishing, a lot of the internationally published books will say first insert your country edition, which Ken has two of, indicating that there is an earlier printing in another country. And beautifully, we saw that in action just now. Again, first thus, I'm going to repeat a lot of things because this is a complicated thing and it bears repeating. The phrase first thus, if you come across it, means the book is not a true first edition, but is a first edition of a completely new reprinting. For example, the first edition of the paperback perversion of the book, or the first edition of a reprinting of a classic.
The paperback perversion of a book?
Did I say perversion? It's just like a little Freudian slip there, huh?
All right.
Okay. Beware book club editions.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Book club's bad. Well, book they're actually probably been pretty helpful over time, but...
Reader's Digest can go fall down a hole.
And start publishing books from there. First whole edition.
This is my sewer edition of Moby Dick.
So book club editions can be, they can trick you. They can get tricksy. I don't run into them very often, so there are some pretty easy ways to find them, to discover them. They're almost never priced. This is a big one. They tend to come from like a catalog-esque publishing house.
Reader's Digest.
Such as Reader's Digest. Although it is important to note that there are like university presses and some like small indie presses also don't price their books. So that's not like 100%. Book club editions are often different sizes, smaller than the hardcover, bigger than the paperback. Usually the paper is a different quality. That's getting a little tetchy, but the size is like they're non-standard. This means less for hardcovers, which are not standard size to begin with, more for paperbacks, which tend to be a standard size. Most importantly, there will probably be a blind stamp impressed in the back cover of a hardcover book. Turn the book over and look near the bottom of the back cover near the spine. There may be a small shape impressed into the cover, usually just an abstract shape like a square or a tringle, triangle.
No, I think I prefer said Tringle, Tringle,
like, completely unironically just then, huh?
I think I prefer Tringles.
This is a blind stamp and indicates a book club edition. It basically exists so that book club editions can't trick people.
And yet they still fucking do.
Well, because nobody thinks, like, I'm gonna feel this up like Daredevil on a Coke binge to see if there's, like, a shape that shouldn't be there.
There's an analogy.
That was probably unfair to Mr. Daredevil.
No, he's gone downhill.
Whoa, coming for you, Daredevil. Also, the flaps of the dust jacket might just say book club edition. You check the copyright page, sometimes has the name of the book club. If in doubt, do a web search for the bibliography of the author in question. That is kind of, that sometimes that feels like an obvious, like, what if you just looked up how many editions exist and which ones are which? But, you know, if you're having trouble, sometimes that's where you go. So that's about it for the rough and dirty guide to identifying first editions. Good places to go and determine value for books. If you think that you have some really valuable first editions, I suspect Ken might be doing this later.
I'm not fucking giving up Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Childermass is in there.
He'll die if you sell him. If you do have, like, a cool first edition, you do what I do, because I'm a goblin, and go to either abooks.com, my prefer.
Abooks.com, you say?
Abooks.com is the website I prefer. Or alibris.com. I think their prices are a little bit goofy. I think Abooks tends to be a little more on the nose.
That's A-B-E Books.
Yes, thank you. That is abebooks.com.
It is one of those wonderful names that is completely incomprehensible phonetically.
Yeah, true sign of the internet era. We didn't expect anyone to have to say this out loud with their human mouth. Or alibris.com, which also fucked me up before anyone spelled it out for me. So alibris.com. I definitely recommend bouncing between the two of them depending on how old and rare you're going. You're going to need it because rare books are rare. So then they don't tend to have been recorded as well, which means finding another copy can be hard. I find that when you've got really obscure shit, like pamphlets on how to use prestidigitation to make your STDs go away, you kind of have to turn to eBay. If you really can't find another example of it, you're going to turn to eBay and you're going to find a bunch of other people who are just as fucking confused as you. I find that this happens with international books a lot. In my case, every time I get a German book, I can't seem to find proof that it ever existed.
Oops.
This is probably because I don't speak German and can't use German-specific resources. So eBay comes through for me in those situations. You know, just generally sites that bridge that international gap.
Remember that one time where you had to learn German?
I had to learn 17th century German specific to the Pennsylvania Dutch Germans for 2 days so that I could explain to an irritated buyer what it said. And it turns out it was just a very weird religious treatise. Big surprise coming from Mormon country, I guess. Mormon country. Oh my god, I'm off my game today. That's so rude. I'm so sorry, the Pennsylvania Dutch, who are German. Amish.
There you go.
Amish, you know, it was some religious reformation text. Very exciting. And he did buy it. So learning all that 17th century German wasn't for naught. But turns out it doesn't translate to modern German.
Also doesn't teach you the difference between Mormon and Amish.
You know what? I'm never gonna live that one down.
No, I... it's fine.
It occurs to me now, I'm looking at my notes and I have a whole another episode in here.
Whoops.
So pretty much my favorite source, qbbooks.com, spelled like it sounds. They are excellent. They have an extensive first edition identification by publishing house guide. And other than that, just a lot of really cool information and a really, really impressive collection that they put online so you can look at it.
Cool.
Everything else is just from learning how to do it.
Do we know what the most expensive first editions are?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we saw them in New York.
The listeners weren't with us in New York.
You were all there. Don't lie. Yeah.
I mean, Olivia was. Hi, Olivia.
Hi, Olivia. Well, there was the very, very deeply funny, like conceptually incredibly hilarious copy of, what's the communist book?
Was it Das Kapital?
It was Das Kapital, and it cost $10,000. which, like,
still funny.
Every time I looked at it, I could feel Marx just, like, rolling.
No, because, like, you all were, like, cracking up in the shop.
It was so fucking funny.
Which I'm pretty sure, like, irritated the people who worked
there. The shopkeeper
there.
Was not especially pleased
with all these fucking punks rolling up into the shop,
yeah,
pointing at the first edition of Das Kapital and laughing their asses off.
Taking pictures, yeah, yeah. I think I made up for it with my reverence for, there was a first edition of Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? That was, I believe, $6,000. A lot of, if it's a recognizable name, the prices very easily rocket into the 10,000s.
Such as Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Okay, that one's a little newer. Well, you know what? Why don't we go things that affect value? Age.
Age, condition. Not being covered in post-it notes.
Not being covered in post-it notes, although people use those because they're non-damaging, so. Yeah, I mean, the usual stuff. Age, condition. A dust jacket is huge with books. They were made to be disposable, so when they are still present, it is pretty impressive and affects the value. Very. Yeah, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell still has theirs. Children Mask kept that tight. Notably, the $10,000 copy of Das Kapital did still have its dust jacket.
Jesus fuck.
Could you imagine being the guy who was like, who bought it and was just like, I better put this one away just in case. Like, someone bought Das Kapital and like, they weren't apparently even especially interested in the politics. And they were just like, this is gonna be important, and stuffed it away.
I feel like in that situation, it's not they thought this specific book would be important, it's they thought all books were important,
yeah,
and then
true.
They just, like, tucked them all very carefully away.
Yeah, I mean, that's book collectors do tend to be like that. I'm looking at that somehow near-pristine copy of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
I moved that through 4 different apartments before I opened it. I don't know how it's still, like, alive.
Other conditions that could affect value, intact pull-out prints, which, that's obvious. They were meant to be pulled out and someone didn't, so there you go, you got lucky. Even just little details like the glassine that covers illustrations. I'm very proud to say I have a copy of Illustrations from the Rosary that has all of its glassine pages intact.
What's a glassine?
Also referred to as onion skin paper.
Oh!
It's like a waxed tissue that they would lay out in books. They would bind into the books to protect plates and things.
To keep the illustrations from fucking up the text and vice versa.
Exactly. So yeah, there you go. They're very, very expensive. And sometimes they're not very expensive at all. It's another one of those fun hobbies where if you want to get into it, you can start out pretty cheap.
For example, if you're looking for first edition copies of The Crystal Shard by R.A. Salvatore, they are rare because they're mass paperbacks, but they're also cheap because they're mass paperbacks.
Yeah.
Mass market paperbacks are the bane of my existence.
I mean, they're not as cheap as a fountain, but...
It's also a hell of a time getting eBay sellers to confirm they actually have the first edition.
Yeah.
Because they're very bad at figuring that out.
Well,
somehow.
Well, mass market paperbacks are very bad at broadcasting that. I know for a fact with the Servant of the Crystal Shard and all that, most of how you tell is based on what is and is not present in the text.
With the Crystal Shard specifically, later editions changed how old the main character was and the gender of a panther. For reasons that are never adequately explained.
Hey, go read that, by the way.
Don't read it.
If that sounded interesting to you, you'll love it.
It's very 80s. It's painfully 80s.
But this is another thing where the internet becomes very helpful, because even if it is difficult to identify, a lot of people on the internet, super fans, will help you out with that. That's how I learn about a lot of things, where people will tell you what is present in a first edition that was edited out later.
For example?
The gender of a panther. Because you accidentally made it get pregnant, and now you have to fix it.
It's never pregnant.
I thought this isn't for the podcast.
I think this is the second time you've assumed that one fanfiction was canon.
Oh my god. Wait, are you sure?
Yes.
Because things got real stupid later in the series.
Yeah, but they never got that stupid. Like, they got pretty fucking stupid, they never got that stupid.
Hey, I'm actually gonna say that a dude having sex with his dead wife is weirder conceptually than a panther having kittens.
She wasn't dead at the time.
Yeah, because she was briefly revived from death. And then she proceeded to die when he was done with her. Oh, and then she went to hell where she made dinner forever.
That got resolved. Four books later, she escaped from dinner purgatory.
Hey, now you have to leave this in. I need you to hit us up on Antiques Freaks Friends on Facebook and let me know which of those scenarios is weirder to you.
Bob Salvatore is going to listen to this fucking podcast.
Oh my God, Bob.
And then never talk to us again.
Bob, if you hear this, I love your work so much. I have all your albums.
What?
So you have any other questions about books before we wrap up here?
No.
I feel like doing an episode on books was setting up like a trap for the both of us.
We made our own nerd snare and then walked right into it. Fuck.
Okay.
If you would like to talk to us more about books or first editions or big nerd shit.
In general,
you can email us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at antiques_freaks, or on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or on Facebook, facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, and our very new, very exciting Facebook group called Antiques Freaks Friends, which you can find from the Facebook page. Quick note about that, Facebook pages are very good for corporations, very bad for people who want to actually interact with other people like we do. So Facebook group is better for that because on a Facebook group, we can actually have your posts on it.
Yeah, it's much easier to like see messages people send us, read posts, like it's so much easier to, we want to see you.
It's so much easier to share the comments you send us with like other people and like... Because, like, that's the thing. There's so many people have left us so many very nice comments that never get seen because Facebook assumes only the page creator should be allowed to show things on the page.
Yeah, it puts it in, like a crypt.
It puts it in, like, a special weird little box that you have to look for if you ever want to read anything.
Yeah, I also feel bad because there have been questions that I didn't get a chance to answer because I don't know when they come in.
Yeah.
Like, Facebook, I don't see it.
Facebook is a garbage hell site for many reasons, but the Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, should help out with that.
Yeah, we like it better.
It's already way better for fan interaction. It's great.
Yeah.
So if you are a listener and you would like to tell us things, head over to the Facebook group.
Yes. Please and thank you.
If you would like to hear some deleted scenes, including, I'm guessing, a sizable chunk of the frantic first edition search of my apartment.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one.
You should check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. There, you can also join our Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
It's very fun.
It is so much fun. Special shout out to our current patrons, Angela, Anjali, Charles, Endless Night Arts, Jared, Juha, Casey, Kevin, Lisa, Matt, Paris, Patrick, Priscilla, Sam, Sarita, Talia, and Zane.
So many names, I love you all.
What? No, sorry. We got a fun email from Zane after our My Little Pony episode.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, man. All right, and thank you to everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.